This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the CIA concludes that Russia interfered in the U.S. election to sway the vote in favor of Donald Trump. Former acting CIA director Mike Morrell has called the development the equivalent of a political 9/11. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. Well before the election in November, the U.S. intelligence community determined that the Russian government directed the illegal hacking of the Democratic National Committee and other political figures, namely John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign chief. However, the current finding goes beyond the original belief that Russia merely wanted to sow doubt about the U.S. electoral process. The CIA conclusion attributes a specific motive, that Moscow intervened with the intent of swinging the election toward Donald Trump. The agency based the conclusion, to some extent, on a finding that Russian agents also hacked the Republican National Committee's computer systems, but disclosed only embarrassing emails from the Democrats via WikiLeaks. Donald J. Trump has denounced this U.S. intelligence conclusion of Russian involvement, calling it ridiculous. However, Mr. Trump's overtly friendly tone toward Vladimir Putin throughout the campaign and the fact that in a July press conference, he actually invited Russian hackers, foreign adversaries, to look for emails deleted from Secretary Clinton's private server disturb lawmakers and officials on both sides of the aisle. Many Republican lawmakers recognize the importance of standing up to Russia and taking steps to restore faith in the U.S. electoral system and institutions. As Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who endorses a bipartisan probe of the issue by the Senate Intelligence Committee, said, quote, "The Russians are not our friends. They do not wish us well," unquote. Mr. McConnell's support for investigating American intelligence findings that Moscow intervened in the election on Mr. Trump's behalf could presage friction between the Republicans who control Congress and who have long taken a hard line against Russia, and the president-elect who has mocked the findings. President Barack Obama says the United States will take action against Russia or any foreign government that tries to meddle in U.S. elections. In addition to the congressional investigation, the White House has also ordered a thorough probe. The Russian hack and the document dump to WikiLeaks meant to undermine Hillary Clinton, as well as Donald Trump's reaction, not only raise questions about the next commander-in-chief's relationship with the U.S. intelligence community, but also the future of U.S.-Russian relations and the future of an open, rules-based, liberal international order. Well, with us to analyze the many implications of the CIA finding that Russia intervened in the U.S. election on behalf of Donald Trump are two distinguished regional analysts. William Pomerantz is deputy director of the Kennan Institute for Advanced Russian Studies at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and that's a Washington-based policy group, and Anders Aslund. He's resident senior fellow in the Eurasia Center at the Atlantic Council, and that's a think tank also based in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Will Pomerantz, let me begin with you briefly. Of course, both of you know Russia very well, and Mr. Putin in particular. And as I said in the introduction, former acting CIA director Mike Morrell actually said the Russian cyber attack, which the CIA determined was meant to undermine Hillary Clinton and help Donald Trump, is the political equivalent of 9/11, the terrorist attack on U.S. soil back in 2001, because this is the first time the U.S. government has ever accused another government of trying to interfere in our election. How do you see it?
It is a very serious charge that has been issued against Russia. We are witnessing a very interesting period in a transition in the United States, and we are also witnessing a very interesting discussion amongst the actual intelligence services in the United States. So what we have right now is, on the surface, is a disagreement between two major security agencies in terms of the intent of Russia. They both agree that Russia was engaged in some sort of covert activity and engaged in the hacking, but they haven't agreed on the intent. But regardless whether the intent was directed at the Democratic Party, obviously Russia has now engaged directly in a U.S. election. It has interfered in the integrity of our electoral process. We now have to wait to see what President Obama does in his very brief period that he's still in office. But it is a fundamental attack, I agree, on the electoral process that requires a response.
Turning to you, Anders Östlund, as Will Pomerantz said, there is a bit of a disagreement. The FBI isn't quite as forthright as the CIA, saying that this was done to sway the election. So to your reaction with respect to what happened?
I think that the organization that really has made itself ridiculous now is FBI. This is evident to everybody what is happening. Here, Russians have hacked emails. WikiLeaks, which has been fully revealed now as a Russian front organization, offered some of these emails literally every day during the last month of election campaign. And this dominated the campaign. We don't need to ask CIA or FBI if this was negative to Hillary Clinton. We can just look up the opinion polls and see what impact they had. Strongly negative, and this was what dominated. So it's obvious that the CIA is more correct. And also, if you look on the sources for this, it would be the CIA that has them and the National Security Agency. There's no reason why FBI would have any relevant sources, since FBI is supposed to work inside the United States and less on cyber issues. Cyber belongs to National Security Agency. So FBI just makes itself ridiculous. And I think that's one of the big questions, how to clean up the FBI after it has proved itself so incompetent and interfered also in the process by saying that there are more emails that they need to look into, and then coming back and saying that there is nothing that has an influence. What I really hope is that President Obama, who's the decisive person, here comes clean. The U.S. has seriously hampered its own reputation by not demanding or having a law that forces a presidential candidate to reveal his tax returns. We have no idea about President-elect Trump's personal finances. We don't know if he has some dubious loans from one country or the other. We don't know how he has made money through his sales of apartments in Trump Tower that sells apartments to anonymous companies. So this has to be clarified, and I presume that this will be a legal change after President Trump. And another thing is that President Obama needs to show what evidence he has to say all these things about Russia and who are involved. So I think that Dmitry Peskov, Putin's press spokesman, was perfectly right and said that the United States has to offer evidence.
Indeed. Some are questioning, Will Pomerantz, why the Obama administration didn't act earlier to punish Russia, even back in October, when they made public the hacking and the WikiLeaks dump, and they knew about the Russian fingerprints, even if they couldn't at that point conclusively state that the motive was to undermine Hillary Clinton.
Well, President Obama acknowledged and recognized the hack, and he did say that the U.S. would respond. The problem with cybersecurity responses is, in theory, you're not supposed to know necessarily when you do respond. So I think he was reluctant to announce his exact strategy, as it were. But Anders is right. It leaves the administration looking weak and not responsive to this question. If there is going to be a real revelation of information, one assumes that it really has to take place before Obama leaves. If we wait for this investigation to place in the Senate, I don't think people have a high anticipation that it will produce a conclusive result. This is not the 9/11 Commission. It will be an investigation that invariably will become partisan. It is unlikely that it will be able to overcome the tension of such an investigation would produce. So Obama could have responded more aggressively in October in the middle of a political election, and he would have been justified based on what we now understand. But the security services generally don't want to interfere in the middle of an election. There is no precedent for Obama to look for in terms of how he would have intervened or announced this information. He did announce it so people could take it into account. It was on the table. It was quite clear, if you really kind of looked at the general situation inside Russia, what Russia's motives were.
Because they obviously prefer Donald Trump, who is much more malleable.
They were only releasing information about one candidate, and they did that consistently throughout the campaign. And it was quite clear, in light of Donald Trump's statements that he did not have the same hard line as Hillary Clinton did towards Russia. So it was quite understandable why the information was only directed against the Clinton campaign. And we're still waiting to see what Donald Trump's strategy and policy will be towards Russia once he gets elected, although we have some interesting hints as to where it's going already. So I understand why people wanted a more direct response from Obama. I share Anders' opinion about the FBI, that they kind of interfered on a different issue without information, and it backfired on them immediately, and it undermined Hillary Clinton. So Obama released the information. It was there on the record. He didn't take immediate action. And I think in light of where we are now, the imperative is to get as much information out there before President Obama leaves.
So, Anders, ask one to you with respect to the probes that will be taking place. There's a White House probe with the Senate Intelligence Committee. What is the major goal of such an investigation?
Well, what's needed is not really an investigation at all, but simply transparency. The White House, as Will points out, needs to put this on the table before President Obama leaves. Obviously, President-elect Trump has no interest whatsoever. And I also agree with what Will said. These congressional proposed probes won't go anywhere because the question immediately becomes, was the election of President-elect Trump illegitimate? And then, of course, all the Republicans have to stand up and say, no, it was legitimate. And that will be the end of that probe. So I can't see that it can avoid that question because, after all, Trump won with only 110,000 votes in the Electoral College. This is a very small majority, and he lost the popular vote by 2.7 million. So he would not be legitimate as a president. And obviously, the Republicans see this immediately, so they will make sure that the investigation doesn't take place.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Will Pomerantz. He's Deputy Director of the Cannon Institute for Advanced Russian Studies at the Woodrow Wilson Center, and Anders Östlund, from whom you just heard, resident senior fellow in the Eurasia Center at the Atlantic Council. We're discussing the implications of CIA claims that Russia sponsored cyber attacks to boost the fortunes of Donald Trump in the U.S. presidential election. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout-out to loyal listener Innocent Aguf from Wukari in Taraba State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to Will Pomerantz. Let's talk about Donald Trump's reaction, Will. Of course, he has rejected and even ridiculed the assessment of the intelligence community that somehow the Russians attacked the U.S. electoral system in his favor for the election. Two things. What does this tell us about the relationship he would potentially have as the next commander-in-chief with the nation's intelligence community? Some say that it's almost incredible that Mr. Trump would choose to believe the Russian denial of interference in the U.S. election over the U.S. intelligence community's assessment, which risks its life every day to keep America safe. So that's one. And the question that Anders Östlund brought up, which is, you know, to what extent do you think his resistance to investigating the Russian hacking is because the Russians may have something on him?
Well, I'll start with the intelligence question, because clearly, again, we're in uncharted waters here with a president-elect announcing that not only does he want to attend intelligence briefings, that he doesn't even trust them either. So this does not bode well, which is an understatement, to Mr. Trump's relationship when he becomes president with the intelligence services. If he starts right from the beginning, not only disparaging them, but not even showing an interest to listen to them, then we are in a very different state of play than we have been in the past. And of course, this creates incredible vulnerabilities for President Trump, because there will be crises. There will be events that he can't anticipate. And do we expect him to say that he's just had Vice President Pence listening in on these intelligence briefings and he only gets them once every 2-3 weeks? It holds all sorts of potential consequences for President-elect Trump if that's going to be his attitude towards intelligence.
Consequences for President-elect Trump and for all Americans.
For all Americans, yes. I mean, the CIA doesn't get everything right every time. That is clear. And Trump's tried to raise that point. But nevertheless, to think that you can engage in foreign policy and not have an accurate knowledge of the intelligence, an up-to-date knowledge of that intelligence. I mean, one of the arts of listening to intelligence is you have to listen to it every day so you begin to appreciate how things are changing. If you're only dropping in and dropping out, you know, occasionally, then you're not going to pick up on how things have changed. And you're simply going to be delegating this to other people. And invariably, that delegation or the claim of a delegation will not work when there is a direct crisis in the United States.
And quickly to the second question, to what extent there's a reluctance on Mr. Trump's part with respect to investigating the Russian hacking, to the extent that there are undisclosed personal or financial interests. Of course, we know he hasn't released his tax returns, nor does he intend to, which could reveal quite a bit about his financial transactions or potential conflicts of interest. Or do you think he's somehow driven by a desire to cooperate with Putin and Russia?
Well, again, as Anders has mentioned, we are in uncharted territory with a president who doesn't have any financial disclosure. And we only have kind of vague hints that Russians have invested with Donald Trump. His son in 2008 proudly announced that a lot of his investors were coming from Russia. So we don't understand the level of Mr. Trump's involvement with Russia. We don't fully understand President-elect Trump's involvement with other foreign banks. He's known to have been getting foreign financing for many of his projects. So it's not just Mr. Putin, potentially, who has something on Mr. Trump. It's a whole variety of people. And again, Mr. Trump is going to be the one who heads the executive branch and theoretically will be overseeing the investigations of potential former business partners. So again, without full disclosure from Mr. Trump, and he had promised that he was going to disclose what he was going to do with his companies on December 15th, and then he didn't make an announcement on that day. He delayed the announcement. So we don't know the extent to Mr. Trump's overseas investments. We don't know who his foreign partners are. And that will create great uncertainty when people begin to address his motives when he becomes president.
Same question to you, Anders Usland. Notwithstanding the probes, the White House, and potentially the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, how do we proceed when Mr. Trump really doesn't believe anything went wrong? He denigrates U.S. intelligence findings. So what does it say about his relationship with the intelligence community on any other issue affecting American national security? And then to what extent, perhaps, is he reluctant to pursue the probe because there are financial or personal interests that we don't know about because they haven't been disclosed and that could compromise our security because he has a relationship with Russia? And that then raises the question of where is his allegiance?
Yeah, let me divide this into two very different questions. The intelligence organizations have got far too big room here in Washington, far too big room and far too big resources since 9/11. So I think that this is very healthy that they are being questioned. Ronald Reagan did the same when he was elected president. He appointed a Team B to do a revision of the CIA assessment of the Soviet economy and Soviet defense expenditure. And the conclusion of his Team B exercise was that the Soviet economy was far smaller than anticipated. And the CIA then, during many years, had to revise their assessments that turned out to be completely wrong. After the end of the Cold War, it turned out that the CIA virtually hadn't got anything right about the Soviet Union. There were far more missiles than the CIA had thought. And the economy was in a far worse state. So I don't like that the security organizations are taken as a whole here. And I think that it's sound that there is a proper revision of them now when 9/11 is 15 years ago. So this is sensible. Another issue is why President-elect Trump is doing this. And here I agree fully with Will that this looks very suspect. But since we have made the point already, we could also see that he might have a policy objective. There is an interesting article in the Washington Post by John Pomfret arguing that perhaps Trump is trying to play Russia against China. And then, of course, he would not have an interest in making negative statements about President Putin or Russia during the campaign. That would suggest that he really had a strategy. While he has been attacking China hard and persistent as a currency manipulator and as a protectionist, taking jobs from the United States. So there could be more sense in it than it might overtly seem because of a very simplistic language and the simple reasoning that Mr. Trump has used in his discussion of these matters.
Turning back to you, Will Pomerantz, what price do you think that the Kremlin should pay for this kind of hybrid warfare against the United States? What can and or should the United States do to deter Russia from engaging in this type of activity again?
Well, one of the options that would be available to the United States would be to increase sanctions, to fine particular either individuals or industries and so forth to impose sanctions. That is the most direct route. The alternative route is to have some sort of counterattack that President Obama has hinted about. But in theory, we don't know if it has occurred or when it has occurred. The issue about sanctions, however, is that President-elect Trump has been quite adamant that he wants to change the relationship between the United States and Russia. And it appears that one of the first things he wants to deal with is the question of sanctions. And in fact, the president has significant discretion as to whether he wants to continue those sanctions because they're issued via executive order and not by legislation. So that poses all sorts of questions as to what the Congress's response would be if indeed President Trump decides that he no longer wants to maintain sanctions. So there are things that one would anticipate President Obama would do, but again, his time is short. I think he's focused on potentially releasing this information as opposed to imposing a penalty. And there's a question as to even if he does impose a penalty, it's really what President Trump wants to do. And if President Trump opts not to impose any penalty for this, then it's up to Congress. And that also poses all sorts of questions as to whether the Republicans in Congress would, as Anders talked about, go against President Trump and create political distance between each other when in many ways it's quite clear they want to cooperate.
Back to you, Anders Aslan, on the question of how to proceed with respect to what price the Kremlin should pay for this type of hybrid warfare, which you both agreed was very serious, and to what extent this is sort of in dissonance with where we think President-elect Trump would be going vis-a-vis Russia. He's spoken very warmly of Vladimir Putin. He feels that they can get along. He's nominated Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, who has a very cozy relationship with Putin's Russia. What penalty should be imposed?
Yeah, the best penalty is openness. Put on the table what we know. President Obama has been very reluctant to be transparent. But now he's on his way out. If he does not put the evidence on the table, this will be really bad for his legacy. And as all presidents going out, the legacy is what President Obama is now most concerned with. With regard to sanctions, just following up on Will's argument here, if President-elect Trump would abolish the sanctions without full justification, we can be quite sure that the Congress will react with legislation and impose it quickly. And it will go through Congress with more than two-thirds majority and overrule any presidential veto. And of course, Mr. Trump will realize this before. So he will not abolish the sanctions. He simply can't do it because he would then unify the Congress against him. But if Trump does away with the sanctions, Congress will just hammer. Where will we see what is happening? I think, as you mentioned here, Rex Tillerson hearings, that will be the critical moment. So the senators, both Republican and Democratic, they will pose a number of questions. Are you going to recognize the Russian annexation of Crimea? What's your view on the sanctions against Russia? What's your view of a Russian aggression in eastern Ukraine? These will be three key questions. And if Mr. Tillerson would fail on these questions, not only he, but also Mr. Trump will be hammered by both Republican and Democratic senators.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Will Pomerantz. He's Deputy Director of the Kennan Institute for Advanced Russian Studies at the Wilson Center, and Anders Aslund, Resident Senior Fellow in the Eurasia Center at the Atlantic Council. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Audrius Rigas. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.